Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, Charlie, you know, who played Curtin, I was his manager for
really
five to 18, and I made him play sweeper because I didn't want to be seen as one of those kind of coach dads. I didn't let him play up front.
Football. At the end of the day, football. It's a funny old game.
It's a game of two hours.
Comedians talking about football.
Comedians talking about football.
Comedians talking about football.
Hello, welcome to Comedians Talking About Football, episode 12, with Paul Cooper, otherwise known as Martin Mucklow from this country, and he's chatting all things Fulham FC in this episode. I'm your host, Sam Michael, as always, and you're listening to the audio version of this podcast, obviously, but there is a video version that you can find on YouTube. Just search Comedians Talking About Football podcast, Paul Cooper, and we should pop up. If you're new to the podcast, why not give some of the previous episodes a go? We've had some great guests, including Nathan Caton, Mark Olver, Jacob Hawley, Sam White, and many more. There are some great guests on the way too, so why not subscribe? This was a great episode to record, as I got to interview a cast member from one of my favourite comedy TV shows of all time, and I'm not just saying that. This country, it blew me away when it came to BBC Three in 2017. And it was great to ask Paul things that I'd always wanted to ask, like, how does it feel to be randomly approached one afternoon by your son and your daughter and be asked, "Dad, fancy playing a peeping Tom in a BBC sitcom?" Lots of this country chat, along with football chat. In fact, a bombshell for me in this episode was that apparently Swindon Town FC wasn't necessarily going to be the team that the character of Kerry Mucklow supported. And we also found out that Paul and I went to the same school in Berkshire. Not at the same time, mind you, but still, I was pretty happy to hear that I went to the same school as Martin Mucklow. So, yeah, I was well happy with that. Anyway, let's kick things off. This is Comedians Talking About Football, episode 12, and this is Paul Cooper talking about Fulham FC. Paul Cooper, thanks so much for coming on Comedians Talking About Football. Welcome.
My pleasure, Sam. Thank you for inviting me.
Now, we're here today to talk about Fulham, of course, but I thought we'd jump straight in with something that people may not know about, and that is that you have a long history of working in football, and you're actually director of the Children's Football Alliance, who do some amazing work. How did that all come about?
Well, Charlie, you know, who played Curtin, I was his manager for
really?
Five to 18. And I made him play sweeper because I didn't want to be seen as one of those kind of coach dads. I didn't let him play up front for the 13 years he was there. Everyone else had a go, but no, you're not playing up front. And so that's where I kind of got started. But I mean, I grew up, you know, with street football. You know, I never had any coach ever, you know, and then went into kind of adult football, you know, Saturday and Sunday league, and again, didn't have any kind of coach. It was, you know, we kind of coached ourselves. So I was just really shocked, you know, by the kind of parents and this kind of Premier League for tots type kind of attitude. You know, it wasn't a children's game, you know, having substitutes and stuff like that. So I started a thing called Give Us Back Our Game with an American guy called Rick Fanolio. And he was the kind of the brains behind it. He was head of sport at Metropolitan in Manchester, Metropolitan. God, swallow me. And so we kind of just had a bit of a campaign, and it went absolutely mental. So we were on Channel 1, BBC One News. I was on the red sofa, Channel 4 News. We were on Sky in the panel discussion, and just in every single broadsheet was absolutely huge. I was on Simon Mayo for about 2 hours, and all these callers just telling me I was a freak. And out of that, we met a guy called Ernie Brennan, who was a documentary maker, and he saw that this was just a campaign. It didn't really have roots. So we started, you know, he started the National Children's Football Alliance about 12 years ago now. And we're now a fully fledged charity. So it's all based around, again, talking of kind of street football and kids playground type football. It's everything is based around that game in one of the games, you know, in the Christmas truce, 1914, during a world war, and the Germans and the Allied soldiers played kind of football, which is extraordinary. So there's a peace pitch in Mazines, Belgium, and we bring kids, deprived kids from all around the world there for a week. We play football and other games and stuff. And we twin pitches all around the world. So we were due, Charlie and I and the other director were due to go out to Israel with a peace pitch, which is a project with Israeli, Jewish and Arab Israeli kids. We've got one going up in the Falkland Islands, one in Japan. Just about to do Dennis Law pitch up in Aberdeen. We've done George Best pitch, was brilliant, on the Kreger Estate in Northern. We had some Protestant and Catholic kids come over to, you know, it's brilliant. Football is just such a good, you know, if you can have a game of football against your enemy during a world war, anything's possible. Football is that bridge. It it's just a brilliant game. It's a simple game.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, there's been a lot of, there's a lot of example of that over in the history. You know, one thing that comes to my mind with those examples you give was, I think, World Cup 98, and it was the USA versus Iran. And you're right, it can just bridge that. It can do all sorts. You know, there's, even if you look back to, we were talking a little bit off air about sort of school days. I mean, you could have the biggest rivals and the biggest kind of frenemies at work, at school. But when your school played another school, you were one. There was something that camaraderie that you just can't replace, really.
Yeah, and also in the great strike in the 1920s, the strikers started playing football with the police, and the government knew then that the strike would break, you know, because...
Really? I never knew that.
Yeah, 1921, I think that was. Yeah,
that's how you could solve most wars, isn't it? Just put football down. They'll quickly get jumpers down, and before you know it, they're having a kickabout. you've been involved with it for a long time, because I saw a picture you posted the other day on your Instagram. Your Instagram's fantastic, by the way. I've been loving the return of Marty Mutlow and the sea shanties. Absolutely fun. Much better than that TikTok lark. I got to say, actually, I think everyone listening to this will agree, the Coopers, the funniest family on the gram by a mile. We'll talk a bit more about that down the line. But I saw you put a picture up of yourself and the Queen. What was that all about? It looked like an FA Cup final, the way you were showing her down the line.
That was when I was at Cirencester Town Juniors with Charlie. And actually, she was that was a Queen impersonator.
Oh, was it?
So it was brilliant. We had a fun day. We had 900 people there. We said we've got a special guest. And people just didn't know. She looks so much like the Queen. Bentley pulled up, and we had a red carpet, the lot, and she kind of came out. People say, what the? You know, it's the Queen. What's she doing here? So, that was back in the 94 or something ridiculous. Yeah, 94,
oh, 94. Brilliant. That's what well... As I said, the Children's Football Alliance do some great work, and you can find out more about the Children's Football Alliance at childrensfootballalliance.com. See all the great work they do across the country and across the world. I mean, it sounds like you've been all over the place.
Yeah, we're in every kind of continent now. And also things like we had kids from the slums in India come over last year, so they've never been out of the city, let alone the slums, let alone going to kind of Belgium. So we had to, mind you, because that we didn't get European funding, which is getting smashed up by Brexit, unfortunately, for us, we had to do a cycle ride from Kent University to Menin Gate in Belgium. So I was following, I only managed about half, and Charlie was carrying on, and I was in the van behind him. I said, do you realize he hasn't changed gear all the way from England through France and Belgium? I don't think he'd ever been on a bike before. So I wouldn't let him forward, so I certainly wouldn't let him play on a bike. And he was in the same gear the whole way, going up these hills.
Oh, bless him.
On a really cheap Naff Holford's bike that I got. Everyone else had, you know, races and that kind of stuff. You know.
That's the commitment right there. Good man.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a funny old game.
So, Fulham. I'll be honest, I was surprised to hear that both you and Charlie, your son, were both Fulham fans, what with you being local to the Swindon, Gloucestershire area, and with the references, of course, to Swindon in this country. Then again, I have been to a Swindon game, so it's not a huge surprise. But where did it all start with you and Fulham?
Well, it's not hugely long ago, and it was actually Charlie that introduced me. I guess it was about 15, 16 years ago or so. And he said, "Dad, I really like the look of Fulham. Can you take me to a game?" So he would have been about 14, something like that.
Yeah.
And we went to an evening game against Watford in the FA Cup. I think we won 2-0, actually. And I don't know, just walking through kind of, you know, being in Putney for a drink and walking through Bishop's Park and then by the river, you know, and going to just something magical about the ground and the people. It's just kind of love at first sight. And from then on, we supported them. You know, it was just literally just bang. You know, it was, I mean, my first professional game, I went, it was 1968.
Wow.
Tottenham won 5-1 and Jimmy Greaves got 4 goals. But then I was living in North Devon and I was obsessed with my local team, Biddeford.
We
followed home and away. You know, I can still remember the 1967 Western League winning team. You know, I mean, that's how sad I am.
Oh, wow. And I know, obviously, you
have nothing else in seven, you know.
And you can still, of course, I mean, you're Fulham through and through, but you still have a bit of, because of your involvement with football, you still have sort of a soft spot for kind of local teams, amateur and professional. Although I do want to just brag for a minute there that I did manage to just get in a joke about Swindon Town Football Club in front of Martin Mutlow, and I got away with it.
Yeah.
But is it a case then? Do you not joke about Fulham then? Is that the actual rule in real life?
That's the actual rule, yeah. No, don't joke about Fulham. Well, they are a bit of a joke, to be perfectly honest. I mean,
I know you said it was kind of Charlie got you into it. That's quite similar with me and my dad, actually, because my dad originally kind of grew up in the era of Manchester United being kind of a team he loved. And then, again, Reading back then, he might go to the odd game, but they weren't on telly, they didn't have big players. And then it wasn't until we started going that he was always kind of a part-time Reading fan, and he became a proper Reading fan with me. So it's quite nice to hear that similar sort of story. And I mean, were you aware of kind of Fulham's history as well? Because when you look at some of the players that have been at Fulham, you know, you mentioned earlier, George Best, Bobby Robson, Frank Penn, Jimmy Hill, they've got great history.
Yeah, I've said Johnny Haynes, the best of the lot. You know, George Best, Bobby Moore, Rodney Marshall,
yeah, Bobby Moore,
which was there twice. And Alan Clark. Remember Sniffer Clark from Leeds United? He was there. So, you know, we've had some really good, but we were kind of always a selling club, and kind of, except for Johnny Haynes, who was only, you know, just played. And George Cohen, obviously, from the World Cup winning team. And, you know, he was the only player that, you know, he lifelong club at Fulham. So, but they've always been a bit under the radar, haven't they? It's never been, they were kind of, I think this, I read somewhere through their history, if you look at their whole history, we're kind of a middling championship team, right? And about that, you know, if you take the last 50 years or whatever, you know.
Well, I was going to say, there's been quite a bit of success over the last decade or so from, you know, championship promotions to, you know, Europa Cup finals. But let's talk about more recently your victory against Brentford. A good Brentford side as well, in what was really a derby in the 2020 playoff finals. How was it not being able to go to Wembley for that? I mean, it would have been an incredible game, especially, as I said, it was a derby. I mean, it's great to experience it, your team getting promoted, but how was it watching from the comfort of your home?
bloody brilliant, because if we'd gone there and Brentford had won, I really couldn't have handled that. And I thought Brentford would win, to be perfectly honest. You know, I thought they were a really good team. But I mean, there are obviously our arch enemies, but I think it's an incredibly run club. They just keep, you know, and I thought they played the best football and they beat us twice in the league. You know, Parker has just kind of seemed to have kind of learned so much at the kind of at tail end of last season, because that was the, you know, we were the first game after lockdown was Brentford at home and we lost 2-0. But Parker has just kind of come on leaps and bounds. It wasn't a great season last season. You know, we weren't playing particularly good football. And I think, you know, he did really, really well. And he seemed to have a bit of a plan B. He could change it, you know. And he's come on leaps and bounds since he's been in the Premiership. And I think, you know, some of the players he had, I think he's done well considering some of the players, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good game for neutral. I mean that free kick from Brian, who I like Brian at left back. I've followed his career since his days at Bristol City, so I've got a few Bristol City friends. And that was wonderfully done. And that was, as you were saying, that was Parker's tactic. You can see he kind of gave him the nod to do that. And what a free kick!
Yeah, it's extraordinary. Yeah, I mean, Charlie and I were watching on TV together. Just went absolutely ballistic. Yeah, and then when the second goal went in. I mean, that was just relief. But, yeah, I mean, to think about going to Wembley, losing to them and being there I had a heart attack 5 years ago. I think that would have ended me. I think it would have been the second time.
I've been to see Reading play three times at Wembley and I've seen them lose three times at Wembley. It's it's cost so much and there's so much build-up. Yeah. I mean, the last time I had it was 2017, and it was still to this day the worst game of football I've ever seen in my life. We lost on penalty shootout, and it's something bizarre about
you beat us in the semis, didn't you? That was
that year. And then I remember there's nothing weirder than being in a crowd which is split, you know, 50,000, 50,000, and you being stood with 50,000 people in complete silence while you get 50,000, the roar of 50,000 people on the other side. There's nothing worse than that feeling.
I can't believe what it, I mean, I, we were there at the playoff final against Villa the next year, wasn't it? And that was just the best experience. Absolutely unbelievable. Yeah. Charlie was at the Portsmouth game when they stayed up, when there's that miracle run to stay up. And he says they were probably on a par, those two games.
Wow, no, I bet. That's the thing. Sometimes, but then had they not won, it would have probably gone down as the worst experience. That's the thing. It can make or break.
Yeah, I felt sorry for the Villa fans after. I just thought, Jesus, what must it feel like, you know?
Yeah, it's bad. It's horrible.
It's got to be, yeah.
But I did see on social media on the night you were at home with Charlie. It looked like a good night. And I've seen on social media as well on his that he's managed to get down to Craven Cottage quite a bit. Do you manage to get there much yourself?
Yeah, we're season ticket holders. He goes more than I do. And we try and go away as well. It's funny. It's all been about, you know, when Fulham had the best run in Europa, we had no money, absolutely no money. Mm. So we did none of the European games. Certainly couldn't afford to go out to Hamburg. So the only games we saw about two League Cup games, because you get in for a tenner. I was, you know, just going for a real financial crisis at the time. So that was really weird. I think we lost to Wickham at home in the League Cup after extra time, if I remember rightly. Getting back at about kind of 1 o'clock and, you know, and then having to go to work the next morning. But we try and go together and we go to quite a few away games, you know, go up by train, that kind of stuff, you know, I just miss it so much.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I've been to the ground, but I've not been there for a game. What is the atmosphere like? And how would you feel if they announced tomorrow? Because it's such an iconic ground as well, with it being the Cottage. With them being a London club, there is always that chance that they've had big investment before, but before you know it, you could have someone with billions and billions pump money into there. How would you feel if they announced that they were going to do what they did with Brentford, and that is sort of, you know, knock down the whole place and build a new stadium? Do you think that would ruin the atmosphere, and would it ruin the ethos of the club a bit?
Yeah, well, I mean, we're building the new stand, the Riverside Stand, which was kind of 70s, a bit antiquated. The Johnny Haynes Stand is listed, level two or whatever, listed building, whatever they call it. So you can't knock it down. So I think that the whole reason that they're building the Riverside means they're going to stay there, you know. And I think there's flats in it and all sorts, you know. And what's going to be also good is now that you can walk all the way along the river now, so there'll be access to the river. Before, you couldn't. You had to kind of go around the ground, but now you can walk past the ground on the river, which is really nice. So, you know, they're certainly investing for the future there. I can't, you know, fault the chairman. So, you know,
that's good. I think it's fine to extend a ground, but when they, because I feel a bit sad for Brentford, because I've been to Griffin Park before. I wanted to go there before they knocked it down, and there's something sad about it just being gone and then moving a mile up the road.
And having four pubs on each, you know, pub on each ground. I mean, geez, that's good. Yeah. I know what you mean, and it looks a bit odd. I must admit, I'm not sure what they're doing with their seats there, all these different colour seats.
I think it's to make up the fact they don't get people in there, so it looks like
it's a classic. It's a classic ground, isn't it? Just. I mean, I went there once to watch Ron Harris used to play for him, Chopper Harris.
Yeah.
Who came and coached our this country team in the charity match last year?
Brilliant!
Chopper Harris gave us a. It is a team talk. Yeah, he's a character. To be honest,
I could imagine Martin Mutlow being friends with Chopper Harris.
Yes, absolutely. I played in goal for a bit with, and Charlie did in a charity game a couple of years ago. And Razor Ruddock was our manager. So match of the Titans. Yeah,
that's amazing. That's amazing. I'll tell you something we do on this podcast is what I do is to prove that I've done some sort of research into a club. I like to hit you with some emergency facts. So I'm going to hit a fact, and then you might have heard it before. You might not have done. So I've got three here that I'll spread out. So here's one. Did you know Fulham's first ground was called the Half Moon, which I think is a great name for a stadium. And they played there for just 4 years between 1891 and 1895.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I didn't. I think their shirts were a bit like Blackburn Rovers, if I remember right.
Yeah, something like that. But there you go. But there's back in the time, you could have a ground for 4 years, which I thought was pretty cool. And here's one I thought was really interesting. Do you know the only player that has represented Fulham in each of the top four leagues in English football? So from League Two all the way up to what they're now called is League Two up till Premier League. Do you know the one footballer who's played in all four? It's not as long ago as you think.
Davis.
That's it, Sean Davis, yeah. 1996 to 2004. That's pretty cool. I was quite impressed with that.
It's a funny old game.
This country. Now, this country, a huge success, a brilliant show. So successful, in fact, that I'm sure there are This Country fans listening to this podcast who don't even like football. That's how big it is. But for you, it was your first kind of proper acting role. And I'm fascinated. I've always wanted to ask this. I'm fascinated to know, what did the conversation go like? We're making a sitcom and we want you to play the Peeping Tom.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of came in. It was going to be a smaller part. And Daisy said that she wanted to, I kind of said, well, what's the part like? She said, well, you look a bit like me, so why don't you give it a go? And so I said, well, what voice do you want me to do? And they said, well, I'll tell you what, go on YouTube and listen to the police interviews with Fred West. Which I did, and he's really, really calm, telling the most horrendous stuff, but in a calm voice. And that's kind of what the voice I did, really. And I did a kind of screen test, and the producer and director said, yeah, that's fine. So, and the character built a bit from there. So I was thrown in. Yeah, the first filming was the Peeping Tom in the caravan. I didn't know what the fuck was going on. Excuse me. I didn't know what was going on.
It's fine.
It's, you know, this was sort of new to me. You know, it's just bizarre. But I just loved it. I so enjoyed it. You know,
I bet. I mean, it's great that you go, you know, going to a BBC sitcom. And do you know what? My next question was the character based on anybody you knew? But that is kind of already answered that with Fred.
Yes. I think every town, every village has got a Martin Mucklow. I mean, they're just guys walking around. You say, yeah, he's a Mucklow. You
know? I mean, like I said, I live in Swindon, so there's plenty of them walking around.
Mm. Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's fun. Now you mention it, it reminds me, the voice actually does remind me of when Dominic West played him in that ITV drama.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's great. Those Swindon shirts of Kerry's, are they actually hers? And if so, did she not fancy Fulham?
She's not into football, but they wanted a local football thing. So it was going to be, because it was based, they thought either Cheltenham Town, but or Cirencester Town, and then they thought, well, Swindon is really the kind of the one. But Daisy doesn't really have any interest in football. That's mad, but Daisy's not really. Yeah, it was just that kind of local connection, you know. So.
No, it's nicely done. It is nicely done. Yeah. I mean, the reason I live in Swindon is my wife's from Swindon, and I thought I'd share this story with you, because obviously Daisy's become so, her shirts have become so iconic. When we got married, we decided we were going to do a little present for each other in the morning. We said, you know, we'll leave each other a present. You know, I sent mine with her bridesmaids to open, and she left mine with the best man. And we both told each other what we wanted. You know, what would you want? And she said, do you know what? I really want this. It was this handbag, quite expensive. She went, I'm really into these handbags. I really like this sort of design. So like a good husband, I went and bought her one. And she said, what would you want? And I'm quite into my football shirts. I have quite a football shirt collection. And I said, you know what? I've always wanted a 1995 Auto Trader sponsored Reading shirt. It's a bit expensive, but I really, really want one. And so, you know, I bought her a present, what she wanted. I sent it to her. And on the morning of my wedding, I opened it up. And what she bought me was a 1995 Swindon shirt instead. And she just left a little note, something that said and reminded me that I'm in Swindon now. You're stuck here forever. So I've got this really nice 1995 Swindon shirt, like a classic, a real retro special, which I used to clean the car, you know. But yeah. I mean, this country came to an end last March. And let's be honest, it was the end of the world. No, really. I mean, it ended and we went into lockdown a week later. So the effect it has. So it's finished. But are you continuing on this acting journey? I saw you appearing in an independent film called Toast. So is it something you're carrying on with, the acting?
I'm trying to, yeah. But it's just difficult, because I think obviously, you know, straight after, you know, COVID's come along. So all the actors really kind of, there's so many chasing so few. So, you know, I've done, yeah, the short film, and we're doing another one, another short film, a serious one about hoarding, which sounds a bit depressing.
Well, you do a lot of work with hoarding, don't you?
That's my kind of job. Mental illness. So we're kind of doing, short film. About that. But yeah, I'm always open, but I kind of, those roles weren't coming. I hope, you know, maybe if the kids, you know, write something in the future, then maybe, hopefully maybe a little thing apart from me. I don't know, you know, who knows?
I mean, we were very sad to see this country end, as millions of others were. But what I think's great is you've kept Martin Mucklow alive through Instagram. The sea shanties have just been brilliant, and the whole Alan's wife thing, amazing.
Thank you. Yeah, so we're taking Martin on the road this year, hopefully. So so we're in Cirencester, a couple of gigs, in Keynsham near Bristol, We're in London at the 100 Club, you know, on Oxford Street, where the Sex Pistols, the Clash have played, and Martin Mucklow's going to...
Because you do play, don't you? You do play instruments.
I do, but I'm playing another gig there. But that's just a music gig. But this is just the comedy stand up with Martin, you know. We're playing in Halifax,
yeah,
and Nottingham. I think that's a lot. So we just got just to see how it goes.
Yeah,
you know, I'm friendly with. The guy does Clinton Baptiste, and I went to see him. And of course, Clinton Baptiste was from,
Phoenix Knights.
Phoenix Knights, yeah. So, I mean, that was about 20 years ago. And he was a fairly minor part, and I'm a fairly minor part in a comedy that's just been. So I thought, and he was selling out all over the place, you know. 6 months tour. So I thought, well, let's just give it a little bit of a go, just see what happens.
Yeah, brilliant. But
experience, you know. So that's the thing. So it will be interesting.
Probably brilliant.
I think it's going to be a lot of ab lib, to be perfectly honest.
Well, that's what a lot of this country was from the looks of it. I saw that you've got it on your Twitter at the moment. Think pinned to the top. There was a deleted scene that you ad libbed.
Mm. Yeah,
which is just brilliant. So I mean. Plenty of that on tour. I mean, it sounds like it's going to be really good fun to go and see them. How can we get tickets for that? I'll make sure I mention it at the end again, obviously, for people to get tickets to.
The main one, I think the only one where tickets are still on sale at present is Halifax, which is the Lantern. I think that's on the 25th of May, hopefully. I mean, if it's still open. And we've got two gigs at Cirencester, the Sundial Theatre.
Yeah, I know Sundial.
The 20th and the 21st, I think, of August, Friday and Saturday. Friday sold out, but there's a few tickets still left for the Saturday, I think.
Oh, brilliant. Because I don't know if I've got this wrong, but we talked a little bit about Newbury and West Berkshire before. Did you play the Ace Base once or twice before?
No, I haven't. No, I mean, I was in a band between 1975 and 82. I was in a band called Relay.
Okay.
It's from Newbury. And we used to play kind of Reading, London, that kind of stuff. Kind of mod kind of era, you know, new wave.
Oh, cool.
So we kind of played The Target. It was in The Target. I don't know. When that got knocked down, the Target.
I know what you mean, yeah.
Under the Mins Music, under the Butts Centre. I used to work at Mins Music in the Butts Centre. My first job, I got £800 a year.
That's
it was. Corn Exchange in Newbury. But we played a lot, really, kind of London. You know, played Dingles, places like that.
Hmm.
I did actually do a comedy gig back in the 80s. That's the only stand-up I've done. And that was, I was working for an electronics company and there was a pro-am stand-up thing at Jonglers in London.
Yeah.
That was about 1985, I think. That's the last time I've been on stage, you know, doing any comedy. So.
Oh, man. In fact, my last gig before lockdown, the first one, was, do you know the Purple Turtle in Reading?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
That was my last stand-up gig was there, just before lockdown.
Wow. Right, okay.
And it was all normally a good night, but because it was so close to lockdown, I think we had 8 people in. So you want to keep the acting going, and you keep Martin Mucklow alive. So I would like to, right now, I'd like to pitch a film idea to you. Yeah, I want to pitch a film. So
do you know
the Rise of the Foot Soldier film series?
I've seen a few clips on YouTube.
The Football Hooligans. I think they're on film 28 at the moment, something like that.
Right.
So I want to propose, what about Rise of the Foot Soldier, Rise of the Peeping Tom, where Martin Mucklow, a Swindon Ultra, goes around the country with the Swindon Hooligans. Gypsy rules, of course. He doesn't throw a petrol bomb until someone's thrown a punch. Or maybe he doesn't even attend the games. Maybe he waits until they're all out, then he takes care of the wives when he goes around the country. You know, he's got a lady at Forest Green, a Mrs. at Crewe Alexandra, that sort of thing. I think it's a hit.
It sounds a winner. Yeah, I'll go halves on the writing with you. They were about that.
There we go. We'll do it. Mandy's up for it. If you turn it down, she's already up. For it.
It's a funny old game. Comedians talking about football.
Right, I'm gonna. So this is a question I want to ask you, which is something I ask all our guests, and it's imagine you're putting together a five-a-side football team. I'm sure you do that in your work with the Children's Football Alliance, you know, and it's a celebrity team you're putting together, and I want it to be comprised of Fulham players, but not the Fulham players you might think of. You know, you wouldn't not necessarily like Scott Parker, Berbatov, players like that. I want a five-a-side team of unsung heroes. So players who maybe didn't get a chance at Fulham, maybe players who people don't necessarily think of straight away when you think of Fulham. So who would your five-a-side team be?
Of kind of dodgy Fulham players.
Yeah.
That's a difficult one. I can't remember. Oh God, I'm terrible with names. We had a goalkeeper who was really small, around about 2000. I can't remember his name, but he was. I don't know. He was. We had the guy who wore the tracksuit bottoms. Who was at Crystal Palace as well. Again,
I know who you mean.
Not that he was a hero. I mean, not that he was a particular hero.
That is the sort of people we're looking for, yeah. Is it Killery? Was that it?
Something like that, yeah.
Gabor Killery. Let me check if it's him. That's it, yeah. Gabor Killery, yeah. I Googled imaged him. First picture that came up is just him and a load of joggers.
Yeah. Well, not a very good, not a good player, but Simon Elliott.
Okay.
Zealand player, kind of midfield. He was. We had the guy from the States who was Johnson, I think his name was, and he really didn't have a clue. He looked like kind of a non-league player, but I mean, he kind of even played. We had him in the Premiership.
Oh, really? He was there in the Premiership, was he?
Eddie Johnson, someone like that from the States, who really was poor. Lee Cook, who came from QPR, the big rivals, and got injured, never played. QPR, and never. I don't think he ever played a game. And then he got kind of transferred or something. Got injured, and we bought him when he was injured because we seem to like buying players that are injured.
I'm just saying that now. So Eddie Johnson, he made 19 appearances for Fulham, but he was there for. He was there for 4 years.
Yes. I mean, he was.
Eddie.
Cucci as well. He was another striker. I got loads of strikers. He was pretty, again, bought in the Premiership, you know, era. And he was pretty ropey. It's funny. You get those absolute gems and you get four or five around and you think, who scouted this? You know, why would you get this player in? You know, have you not watched him? You know, I mean, I'm no expert, but it's quite incredible. How many is that I got then?
That's five right there. Do you know what? This is my favourite question I ask because when you first ask it, you go, that's a strange question. Why wouldn't you want five legends? But when you get them together, you realise what a funny five-a-side team they make. And you look at players like, I've just put Lee Cook up on Google and I found that he was there from 2007 to 2009 and he made a total of zero appearances for Fulham.
Yeah.
Amazing. He ended up on loan at ended up at Eastleigh. There's where he ended up.
There we go. Yeah. So pulled our pants down there.
So there's your five-a-side team of dodgy Fulham players, we'll call them. That's brilliant. Perfect. Just what we were looking for. But now I want you to get another five-a-side team of players to play against them, but they need to consist of five characters from this country.
Right. Well, three of them actually played have played football together in a game. So right. I think I have those. So that was myself, Martin Mucklow, and I was in goal. There's nothing much gets past me. Burton, who just kind of wafts around midfield. Daisy was actually doing, as Kerry was doing the commentary, live, and she called him Pot Noodle because his legs were so thin. The other guy who played from the cast was not a very big role, PC Weber. So I have him in the team.
Okay, PC Weber.
I'll definitely have Mandy in it.
Yeah.
And Ashley McGuire, who plays Mandy, is a big Chelsea fan.
Oh, brilliant.
That's a bit of a rivalry. that's four, isn't it?
Yeah.
The coaches for the day, the two managers for the day, when we had the This Country charity game, were the vicar and Len.
Oh, great.
And I think the vicar came kind of dressed in shorts and looked a bit natty, Paul Chahidi. I think he can play a bit, but he kind of just said he'd be on the sideline. But I think he should have been on that pitch that day. To be
oh, so Vic, we'll get Vicar on then. But he's not insured. We must remember that.
Yeah, of course.
I love in that, because like I said, I'm quite into my football shirts. I've got quite a collection. And something brilliant about in that episode when Kerry gets injured playing football, that he's wearing an early 90s Premier League referee shirt. I just thought, where do you find that? That was so funny that he was wearing.
Oh, the costume department are brilliant. You know, I mean, it's just some props and stuff like that. That's why they pay, you know, get are in those jobs. I mean, they come up with some absolute crackers. Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. So, so good. Right. Let's have another Fulham emergency fact. So did you know that this is quite an interesting one, especially as we were just talking about Mandy. Henry Norris, who acted as chairman of Fulham through the early 1900s, rejected an offer to relocate Fulham to where Stamford Bridge lies today. The man who tabled the offer to him, put the idea out there, Guy Mears, because Fulham rejected it, he subsequently formed Chelsea Football Club instead. So what could have been?
God, what could have been? The Mears family, they were in Chelsea for years, weren't they? Brian was another one. Yeah. Wow. That just doesn't bear thinking of. Not being by the river. Oh, you've got to have a football team. Ground by the Thames. That's the only proper thing to do, isn't it?
Exactly that. Paul Cooper, you come on. Comedians talking about football. You claim to be a Fulham FC fan, but you're going to have to test it with the 10 questions sudden death challenge. Will you take the challenge?
I'll take the challenge, but I'll be shit.
So here we go. The first question. Did you say you were good with dates or bad with dates?
Terrible. Shocking. Up until kind of the early 70s, I remembered every kind of FA Cup, but after that, yeah.
Well, here we go. I think it's going to be quite a tricky one, to be honest. I've looked at questions, but as I said, if you get over one, you won't be bottom of the table. So that's fine. We have had someone go out on one, so no problem at all. So question one, in what year were the club formed? Was it 1887, 1884, 1879, or 1876?
1879.
Do I like that?
Correct. Where did the club first play their home matches? Star Road, Purser's Cross, or West Brompton?
The first one.
Do I like that?
Star Road, correct. So that you're not bottom of the table. We're all good. Which team did Fulham buy Edwin van der Sar from in 2001? Was it Juventus, Lazio, Inter Milan, or Fiorentina?
Juventus.
Do I like that?
Correct. You're now a joint with Arsenal fan, Tottenham fan, and a Man United fan. So you're good. You're doing good. This is quite a tricky one, I think. In which season did Fulham first play in the Football League? Was it 1911-12 season, 1899-00 season, as in 1900 season, 1907-1908, or 1903-1904?
1903-1904.
Bloody!
It's the wrong answer, I'm afraid. It was 1907.
Right, okay.
Oh, well, there we go. There we go. The three out of ten is not bad.
Yep. Sorry.
Thought that was the fourth. Sudden death. We have 10 questions.
Oh, I beg your pardon. Sorry.
You don't go away empty-handed because everyone who comes on, as long as they take the challenge, then they leave with a Fulham classic football shirt. So I will send over to you a football shirt, obviously a Fulham shirt. And it's from 2010. I've left it downstairs. I should have it with me. I'm unprepared. But if you write me over address, I'll send one out for you for coming on the podcast, as I really appreciate
you coming on.
Thank you very much. Best of luck with everything going forward, especially with the new the independent film Toast. I want to keep an eye out for that as well. And
Swindon and Highworth, so a local Ollie Rogers, a local director in Swindon, young director, so keeping it local.
Fantastic. That's what we like to see. And of course, keep up the sea shanties as well. These songs are absolutely hilarious. If it's all right with you, we might play out on one, if that's all right.
Absolutely, be my guest.
Paul, thank you so much, mate. I really, really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Sam. Thank you so much.
It's a funny old game. Comedians talking about football.
Thanks again to Paul Cooper. What a top guy. What a top guy. And don't forget to follow him on social media, especially on Instagram, where you'll see a lot more Martin Mucklow. His handle is at Paul57Cooper. So, yeah, give him a follow. You can also find out about the great work he does for the National Children's Football Alliance at childrensfootballalliance.co.uk. And also keep an eye on his social media for tickets to see Martin Mucklow live. That show sounds great. You don't want to miss it. I'll see you next time when our guest will be comedy legend Mike Fenton-Stevens. And along with chatting about his time on iconic sitcoms such as Only Fools and Horses, Outnumbered and One Foot in the Grave, we'll be chatting about his many years as a Man United fan and an iconic story about him meeting Eric Cantona that you really don't want to miss. Until then, I've been Sam Michael. Follow me on Twitter at SamJMichael, and I'll see you later.
This is a sea shanty, all the rage. This is a tale of a maiden so fair. The first time I met her had come in her hair. She looked at me and started to flirt. I gave her the full works and then she did squirt with a ho. Hey, merry old Mart. Roger me senseless until I fart. Alan is looking at the king of the peepers, and then it's one or two pints down at the keepers. See ya.
Sports Social Podcast Network.